All too quickly, talkative, affectionate young boys seem to slip away. Adolescents may become reclusive, only opening up to their friends and spending more time on devices than with family. How do you penetrate this shell before they're lost to you? Drawing on decades of experience garnered through thousands of hours of therapy with boys, my guest today, clinical psychologist Dr. Adam J. Fox, explains the key to communication in his new book, Cracking the Boy Code. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, you know, more and more we're hearing, of course, a lot about empowering girls and women, which is great. But along with that is communication with boys and subsequently men. Your book seems very timely. Was that by design?
Well, in part, these problems have been escalating over time. I've been working with boys for more than 20 years, and to be honest with you, Terry, the only reason I began doing it was because no one else in my community wanted to do this type of work, because boys tend to not know what to do in therapy, right? They're not the most natural communicators, and so I started to do the work, and the way that life goes for lots of people is you dedicate yourself to something, it becomes intensely interesting to you, and the next thing you know, you spent a lifetime working on that problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I wrote the book both to help families and schools connect with boys, which is so important, mm-hmm. but also to advocate for boys themselves, who I think are infinitely more complex than the way our world typically describes them or refers to them.
Yeah, I think I could understand that. As I was reading your book, I saw that watching the movie Gladiator somehow seemed to help you crack that little nugget early on.
Oh my gosh, yes. That was such an amazing moment, because I was struggling to do these social skills groups with boys, and I was, you know, thinking, well, I've been working with them individually. These groups should go well, but they weren't. The kids didn't like coming. They felt like they had been identified as having a problem or a mm-hmm. deficit. And so, you know, they looked so glum. Their arms were crossed. And I almost gave up doing these kinds of groups and this kind of work. And then I happened to be watching television back in the days when TNT showed the same movie Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The movie was Gladiator, and there is Russell Crowe in the character of Maximus. And in the opening scene, he is using this credo, strength and honor, as a way of galvanizing the focus and the strength of his troops. And it just clicked for me that that's exactly what I needed to do with my kids. And I began greeting them with that strength and honor phrase, and then, you know, I began passing around a shark's tooth amulet to signify the boy that had expressed the most social courage in our meeting. And the take-home message, and what I hope your listeners remember, is that when we make boys feel the way that they really want to feel about themselves, they are more than happy to engage, and we take the relationship so much farther.
Yeah, yeah. Why is that there's such a hard time with that? You do have a part in your book, of course, you explain all of that in your book, which we do want folks to buy, Cracking the Boy Code, that is by Dr. Adam J. Cox, and it is that right and left brain thing, the hemisphere of our brains going on. What's going on there?
There seems to be, you know, a tendency for boys to do a lot of processing over in the left hemisphere of their brain, where you kind of, you know, work out the facts. So, for example, if somebody says to you, my dog died last week, your left brain kind of hears, you had a dog, this dog died, and this event happened last week. Just the facts, ma'am. But the right hemisphere of the brain is where you would notice a person's facial expression, body language. It's your right hemisphere that would pay attention to the tone and pitch of their voice. And, of course, all of those nonverbal cues give you a more comprehensive understanding of what was just said to you. So we have a whole generation of kids, in part affected by electronics and other kinds of sources, that have these kind of right hemispheres that are largely turned off. Now, I don't want to, it's a generalization, and there are many boys with excellent right hemisphere processing skills, but we have huge numbers of kinesthetic kids who learn by moving, by touching, by mapping space with their mind, that don't have really good right hemisphere skills, and as a result, miss all kinds of social cues. So often it looks like they're disinterested, when really they just you know, they didn't have full access to all frequencies of communication.
Now, is that something that would develop later, or is that something that we encourage, or is that just the way it is?
Well, I think that's a little variable. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly if, you know, your peer group has an enormous influence. If you are among other kids who are, you know, invested in kind of that kind of social perceptual processing, then probably you're going to learn a little bit more about how to do that too. And naturally, as you grow and you have more life experience, you do get better at some of those things. But there are a lot of those tendencies that tend to be somewhat recalcitrant, and it's very difficult to change them. And so, you know, even over time, and I think that's no surprise to you know, some of your listeners, that, you know, many women would say that a primary struggle in their adult relationships is having their partners fully be able to perceive and understand some of the signals that they're sending.
Right. Oh, amen to that, brother. In chapter one, you describe what is good communication, and I loved one of the lines that you use because it so describes that limited communication. You going to eat those fries? You going to finish
right.
those? I just love that. I thought, oh, who has not heard that one?
So the critical thing is to know that, you know, there's if we divide communication into two groups, one type is instrumental communication. Can I have $20? Pass the milk. You going to eat all them fries, right? Boys
yes.
know how to ask those questions. It's not as though they don't know how to get their basic needs met. Mm-hmm. But it's the social communication that tends to be a struggle for them. For example, asking them to define what makes someone a particularly good friend, or why they like or dislike a particular teacher. Those kinds of things that require more emotional intelligence, greater kind of complexity, ability to parse feelings, and so forth. That's kind of a struggle for boys. And unfortunately, so many kids in our culture just have a real lack of practice with that type of communication.
And why is taking them seriously so important? You mentioned that in your book as well. Again, Cracking the Boy Code. Adam J. Fox is my guest. What are the psychological needs that we do not assign to boys?
Well, one of the reasons that I mentioned taking boys seriously is that I have noticed in my work with kids that from a very young age, one of the reasons that kids are so dysregulated, some of the times the reason that younger boys will have tantrums or they'll act out, is that they feel as though they are being infantilized. They are often being treated mm-hmm. as, you know, what they perceive to be incompetent or incapable of doing certain things. And it feels kind of insulting to them. And so we have to really check our instincts. Sometimes, even when we think to ourselves, boy, this child has really, you know, he's acting in a regressive way and he hasn't done anything to warrant my respect or seriousness, we still need to kind of offer that as a way of building a bridge, because often that's what kids are communicating, is I want to be taken seriously. As a corollary, we would not walk through an orphanage and think to ourselves about all these babies crying in cribs, well, I'll pick them up when they've learned to stop crying. That would be absurd. We would just reach down, scoop the baby up, cuddle them, try to provide comfort and say, okay, maybe they will now stop crying. It is the same with boys in many respects, is that we should offer the respect before we begin to expect so much. Because if we have this very hierarchical, top-down kind of relationship with kids, sometimes we fail to build the bridges that, you know, the essence of relationship.
Right, right. I remember in my own upbringing, the adults, it was kids are to be seen and not heard.
Right,
and
that's right.
And I think that has changed significantly, and hopefully even more so. I believe that your book, Cracking the Boy Code, is an essential read, I think, for people, because as we try to communicate and as girls and women try to become more empowered in their own way, allowing boys and cracking that code for them, it just enhances the communication for everybody, and everybody benefits.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I have felt for more than 20 years that when you're working on this issue of male communication and helping boys to kind of put good habits in place early on, you are ultimately helping, you know, the world at large, and especially helping their future partners, the people that are going to either be in relationships with them or are going to be working with them, that are going to be fellow community members. So absolutely, this is not just about improving the lives of boys, but improving the lives of all those who live, you know, with them.
Yes, and I think, again, after reading your book, and I'll admit I haven't read the whole thing, but the nuggets that I've gotten out of it, it's obviously, and your experience just shines through the book. You do mention a universal tone that helps boys listen.
Well, and what I call that is task tone, and I've learned over the years that when we put too much emotion into our speech, that what boys hear is that emotion, and they don't then pay attention to necessarily the content of what we're trying to say. So, you know, the form of our communication is ultimately more important than the content. And sometimes when we're struggling to get great conversations going with boys, it's because we've put the cart before the horse and we've not spent enough time setting the table, and that begins with a really constructive tone of voice. I call it task tone because it's very matter-of-fact. It's a little bit monotone. It sounds unusual to parents when I model it in sessions, but then when I have boys come in and I begin rapid-fire questions, often in a first meeting as a way of building a relationship, I watch as they kind of like, you know, a little bit stunned that, How is this conversation going? Because it goes very fast. The boys are responding very quickly. And I'm often asking questions that are not necessarily difficult for them to answer, but the point is to get the form of communication going, get the pace and the whole kind of atmosphere of communication working so that then, you know, we can kind of move into more complex topics. When you ask kids about things they already know a lot about, it tends to build confidence, and then they feel so much less reluctant when you get to more complex topics that require, you know, some reflection on their kind of emotional thinking and so forth.
You know, that makes so much sense because it gives them the opportunity too that it's established then that they feel better about themselves and that it's okay not to know the answer to everything.
That's absolutely right. And if we can learn as parents or as teachers, as mentors, to ask questions that are not so much, you know, about interrogating boys, but literally getting to know them. It's just to be open to getting to know their thoughts, and that when they say something that seems wrong or even outrageous to us, not to kind of act on that impulse to correct or to challenge or to argue, but just, you know, pursue it a little bit further in the interest of knowing where that thought or where that idea comes from.
Yeah. Fascinating. We are talking with Dr. Adam J. Cox, PhD, his book, Cracking the Boy Code, How to Understand and Talk with Boys. And I think that's that little word with makes such a difference instead of at. And how are, we've got a few minutes left here. How are electronic devices challenging communications?
Well, they're having kind of a big effect. And, you know, one of the things is that the way that electronics have shaped the way that young kids' minds work is that, you know, if life used to be about peaks and valleys, now we have a lot of peaks and very few valleys, right? Because electronics have filled up all of the downtime, you know, in your mental space. And I've written before that in order for us to have a civil society, we need to have kids that are capable of tolerating boredom. It's not that boredom itself is something to be valued, but a mind that can tolerate boredom is also a mind that is capable of being reflective, is capable of slowing down, and is thus capable of empathizing, of thinking seriously about other people. And so, you know, I have, and of course many people have worried that electronics are making it increasingly difficult for boys to do those things. But I just like to add, Terry, that, you know, one of the things is that we do tend to focus a lot on things like video games or bullying or disinterest in school. And I tried in the second half of my book to emphasize many of the positive things that can happen in boys' lives that are the best answers to that. I don't think that we should spend so much time wringing our hands and worry about those things that we have relatively little control over. Instead, I am strongly advocating that we focus on helping boys to find a deeper sense of authenticity and especially purpose, because this epidemic, this national epidemic that we have of anxiety and depression among among adolescents, and especially as it affects adolescent boys. I think that the reason for that is that there is so much existential despair out there. And what I mean by that is so many boys kind of coming of age and having no sense of purpose, no sense of what their role is in their broader community or in society. It used to be, of course, that kids at a young age would develop those kinds of skills early on in their life. Mm-hmm. And they would have a role by the time they reached adolescence, but today we ask kids to wait almost until they're in their 20s before they can do anything significant along those lines.
Yeah, yeah. Such important work, Cracking the Boy Code. This is a really good book, and I think it's sort of incumbent on all of us. I don't have a boy in my life. Well, I have some nephews that I talk to occasionally, but I'm that aunt that, you know, they just kind of look at. And now that I've read Cracking the Boy Code, I understand more about what's going on with them. And I'm the adult in this thing. And that means it is incumbent on me to pay a little bit more attention and change what the way I'm approaching the boys.
Yeah, absolutely. So, is that we take responsibility for that. It changes mm-hmm. everything, and they know it right away when we do that, Terry. They can sense how our attitude is shifting, and I think that they will then take a step toward us.
Dr. Fox, thank you so much. Adam J. Fox, the book is Cracking the Boy Code. Now, you have other books. Would you like to mention those?
Well, I have a book called Boys a Few Words, because I began writing about this many years ago, and another called No Mind Left Behind, about executive skills as they affect school-age children, and one called On Purpose Before 20. I was very fortunate some years ago, Terry, to spend 2 years traveling the world and asking boys about where they find a sense of significance and purpose in their life, and so I've included a lot of that information in this current book as well.
That's wonderful. Thank you again for your time. Wish you the best. And folks, I really encourage you to buy Cracking the Boy Code by Adam J. Fox. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.